Hello, everybody, and welcome to Backroom Pitching. I know we've been away for a while, but I have a good
That's been
reason.
a while, hasn't it, Harry?
It's been quite a while. But first, before we get into serious topics about why I've been away for a while, I want to talk about how terrible EA Games has handled being a game developer and distributor for the past 48 hours.
Oh, not just the past 48 hours, it's been like a good decade at least by now.
I think that, I mean, there's sort of been this running gag, at least online, where I've seen, there's a guy who has, like, the face of EA, like, it's the EA logo.
Oh yeah, is this the comic that's on Reddit quite a lot?
Yeah, and basically he,
Yep.
like, he gets, like, different developers, and it's
Yeah,
usually,
yeah, yeah.
like, the most recent one before what happened today, it was Visceral, who had created, Dead Space, and I believe the Army of Two series, and it was like, well, looks like your time's come, my old friend, and they were like, what? And then the EA shoots them in the head, and then
Yeah,
it pulls back.
it's meant to be like a dad is taking his stepson or his adopted son or something to on some outing, and then it's actually revealed that he's just killing his own son. Like that's the premise of these comics, and it's so accurate that it almost stops being funny at a certain point,
Yeah,
but
I
it's
think
still
now.
hilarious. But like what is actually hilarious is the level of EA's cartoon super villainousness. If that's a word at all that I'm not just making up out of my arse. It's the fact that like they actually have a level on which they operate and do business, which does mimic, like Lex Luthor from all the Superman movies or something like that.
But well, and comic books for that matter.
Oh, yeah, anything. Like it's just like, well, I like to imagine, EA like Gene Hackman though. Like, it gives them a bit of class, it gives them a bit of a little bit of edge, but by far the best representation I've seen of EA at this point has been in South Park, actually. Like,
Really?
well, it was either last season or it was either the 15th or 16th season where Cartman there was an episode where Cartman started running a crack babies league.
Oh God, yeah. Oh my
Yeah,
God.
yeah, yeah.
That
And
sounds
then,
incredible.
EA gets involved, and like if anyone hasn't seen that episode, please go out and watch it if you care at all about SimCity 4 because or the new SimCity, because it is so accurate what they did to that game that it's ugh.
It's no, I remember that episode. Yeah, you're right. It's season 15. It's called Crack Baby Athletic Association, and I completely forgot about this. There's that whole like second act where EA Sports tries to get in on Cartman's Crack Baby get, like as if they wanted to make a Crack Baby game.
See, when we're talking about the episode in concept like this, it sounds a little odd, but when you watch the episode itself, it all makes sense.
Yeah, well, the weird thing is that it's I didn't know that like in like I'm looking it up now. I didn't know they actually used the real name of somebody who actually works at EA. I don't know what that was in. I have partial idea what that was in response to, and the fact that it was about sort of it was a mix of the fact that the NBA was exploiting certain plays in their league and but also the fact that EA has exploited a lot of people as well to some degree.
Well, it was to do with the whole college basketball and
That's what it
college
was.
football kind of thing. It's the fact that EA Sports is able to make these games and like use these actual real human images to represent people who exist in both a copyrighted sense and a reality sense. And there was no money being passed on to these people simply because they were classed as student athletes.
Yeah, and they basically the financial sort of I nearly said reparations. The financial the fine the money that they were entitled to was a lot less than they should be, like a lot less than they should be, like actual pro athletes. And I'm pretty sure that they have to some degree the same skill. I don't know what I obviously we've discussed before. I'm not a sports person. I don't know what the difference in skill is between basketball leagues. Like, I feel like if somebody's in college and playing amazing at basketball and they're using
Well,
franchise
I know
sports.
about as much as you do about sports, but I do know that college basketball is the biggest scouting pool for the NBA.
Yeah, in the same way I mentioned that college football is the same for the NFL and stuff like that. And I in the I guess the same thing in Australia as well. Like we have diversity.
To a level. Like I'm not sure how the Australian kind of scene works, because I have a couple of friends who are who are at uni grade soccer. Like they're in the Wollongong High, no, not Wollongong High, the University of Wollongong soccer team. But I'm pretty sure they're older than a couple of members of the Wollongong Wolves and other similar kind of soccer teams that surround the area. So it might be different, but that's also soccer. So, you find a soccer team wherever you go. Like you could find, you could go to the Mariana Trench, go right to the bottom, and there'd be James Cameron and a soccer team sitting right next to
It's like there's like Pele is like, I cannot believe we got to see the bottom of the ocean, James. And he's just like, yeah,
They have
no,
so much funds. How could they get me?
keep going, Pele.
But enough of racist impressions. So, what's your point about SimCity?
Okay, so yeah, the whole thing with SimCity is that in the past 48 hours, like EA have done the best that they can, and by that I mean nothing. No, for what's been going on? Okay, so the whole thing was like, here's the thing is that the EA owned this little Steam distribution thing called Origin, and Origin is a bit, sorry, not Steam distribution, game distribution.
Styled after Steam.
Yeah, styled after Steam. That's what I was going for. It's a content distribution software, and it's called Origin. And I actually had to get it and install it. And I was hoping to get it for the SimCity beta. I actually got codes for it, and it wouldn't install. I don't know if it was something to do with my computer or if it was something on their end. Like maybe the files that I was getting were corrupt or incomplete. Anyway, I missed out on the beta, and I was pretty bummed about that. I did get to play it at a friend's place who also had one, and it was awesome, and I had such a thrill. And I was like, yes, this is going to work. This is going to be good. It's going to be fine. I love the gameplay. I love the way they've got things set up. It's a little bit too easy, but it's actually meant to, bring new players in. It's understandable. That's the demographic they're going for. And I received SimCity today, and I was like, yes, okay, I got it. I've started sort of reading up, on Polygon and viewing a few YouTube videos. A lot of people were giving sort of what they were calling PSAs about the fact that, the game, might not work because of servers being down and stuff like that. And I thought, you know what, it's been 24 hours since the launch in the US. I should be fine. It should be fine. Australia is a small region.
Oh, Harry, you naive little boy.
I should be fine.
It's EA, come on.
And so I installed everything. And it happened in 10 minutes. I put the disc in, it installed, it opened Origin, which I absolutely loved. I love that it was a feature, which I experienced with XCOM, like literally 2 days before when I was installing that into my system, and it was great. It did it. It updated. The update took literally 5 minutes. It was amazing. And then I literally for the past 12 hours of my not 12 hours, sorry, it's we're recording this and it's in the evening. For the past, I don't know, 7 hours or so, I've been getting the exact same message, unable to connect to EA servers. It's just constantly coming up, and it's in this fucking awful little gray box that makes me just imagine that's what it's like in a cubicle at EA Games, and it just frustrates me to no end. Like with every single.
Wait, we do you mean like everyone who works at EA is sitting in a cubicle just staring at the computer, being like, "Oh God, I wish I could connect to the bloody internet on this thing."
No, I did not. I mean,
Like they have a Wi-Fi problem at the EA headquarters or something?
No, I mean, their actual cubicles are like this very weird, almost sort of quadrilateral sort of like box that has like curves around the edges, and the curves are like meant to promote like individuality and ingenuity, but really it's just like another fucking like mask to cover up how awful everything is in the office. And it's just like every time it comes up, I just get so frustrated, and it gets even worse when, so to start the game, they kind of make you do a tutorial, and I thought, okay, well this is gonna pass the time while the servers fix up, and I got literally 70% through the tutorial. I got to the part where they're about to introduce the annoying, bullshit, social side of the game where it's like, hey, if you got friends, you can connect to towns. I'm like, I don't really want to do that.
Fuck that.
I know, and I'm just like, I'm right there, and I'm about to click visit this bullshit town that we've made up to give you an example of, how to connect socially, and I click on it, and it comes up unable to connect to EA servers. And
Oh,
I just fucking lost it. I was like, that's it. Game over for me. I'm shutting this down. I'm not playing this. I'm not gonna even attempt to try and, boot the servers. I'm done. I'm fucking done with you. You awful, awful cretin of a game. It's just, it's done. And I've had so many people compare it to like the Era 37, the Diablo 3 experience, and I'm like,
Yeah, that's exactly what I was just about to bring up. It's the fact that I bought Diablo 3 when it was released, like on the day, and I could not play it for at least 5 days after its release date. Like, it was absolutely ridiculous. Of course, I still played it, and I had fun. Like, I played Diablo 2, but I was never a massive fan of it as much as everyone else was. Like, I didn't play it for a decade straight, waiting for the new one. But when the new one came along, I was like, yeah, the second one was fun. I'll have a go at this one. And the fact is that, like, if this is the way that contemporary gaming is going, then I'm hanging up my hat then and there. Like, if Half-Life 3 gets announced and, needs me to be online every second of me playing it,
Oh,
I'm gonna
fuck
completely denounce everything I've ever said. This is my favorite game frame. Like, the Half-Life series, me and every other completely cliched video gamer in the world.
that.
Like, that's my favorite game franchise right then and there. If they make it that I have to play it online, which a lot of people who love Diablo 2 and Diablo 1 had to go through, like, it would be heartbreaking, completely heartbreaking.
Yeah, I'm assuming you've seen like the top posts from gaming, on Reddit, where they're showing off like Tropico 4. Just buy
Yeah,
Tropico
well,
4.
that's
Oh,
exactly it. Because I've been quite excited for the new SimCity game,
no,
and
same.
then. Like I like you know I've I was thinking I was gonna wait until after it was released to actually see what the vibe with it was about, because as soon as EA was the publisher, I didn't really have high hopes for it. So I was waiting to see what the general consensus about it was, and then I saw that post on Reddit, and everyone was just like, yeah, get this game instead. So I'm actually currently, as we speak, installing Tropico 4, and
Oh,
I
you bought
bought it
it?
this afternoon. Yeah, I bought it this afternoon.
Oh, congratulations, man.
Yeah,
That's
well, it's my
fantastic.
birthday next week, so I thought I'd splash out on myself.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll make sure there's a special birthday episode. The weird thing is that I've actually been sort of following since I read that post this morning, I've been checking Steam every couple of hours just to see where Tropico 4 is on like the list of the top sellers. And
Yeah, what do you reckon?
it's no, it hasn't even cracked like cracked like the top 50 yet,
Oh, really?
it's sad. It's really sad. Like the one
That's actually kind of weird, because Reddit usually has a bit of compelling power in that sense. Like, if you ever go on YouTube, well, it could be because you have to spend $40 on the game. Like,
Oh
now
yeah.
if I wasn't if I wasn't all right in money at the moment, then there's no way I would have just bought it as
No,
hastily as I
exactly,
did.
yeah. Well, here's the thing is that in awful like in terms of like awful news, like if you look at the top 20 like right now, do you remember the whole controversy with The War Z?
Oh yeah, dude, I've been a War Z fan for ages, actually. Like,
Whoa,
I
whoa, 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 whoa! You know I'm saying The War Z, not DayZ, right?
No. I'm completely on board with what you're saying, man, because I remember when both DayZ and the War Z were both kind of combating each other. Like, when DayZ was first announced, then War Z tried to, as quickly as they could, rip off the franchise. Now, I was there during the whole thing, because a friend of mine already had Arma 2, and he was talking about this new mod, and I was just like, well, what's it about? And he explained DayZ to me, and it sounded like the most incredible game I've ever heard of. Well, not the most incredible, it sounded just like an endless amount of fun. But I couldn't be bothered to go and spend $50 on Arma 2 and the expansion.
Yeah, I
So
was.
when the War Z came out, the same friend, he went and bought the War Z, and he was telling me about it, and he was just like, yeah, it's basically the same game. It's buggy, but it's buggy in different areas. Like, at the moment, they're both pretty much in beta stage, like, technically, and stuff like that. Both being developed, they're both getting more content added on, blah blah blah. If you buy now, you don't have to buy again, etc. etc. So I bought the War Z because that's the game that my friend was playing more of at the time, and I've actually enjoyed a lot of, like, I've at least sunk, I'd say, about 15 to 20 hours into that game. Like, it's actually been a lot of fun. I didn't see that many problems with it. Especially when they brought in this feature when they controlled the amount of sniper rifles which were in the game, which made
What?
it a lot harder for. No, that was a good thing,
Oh, wait,
because
sorry, wait. Are you talking about the Warzy or Daisy?
the War Z.
Go on.
There was a period when everyone basically, if you found a sniper rifle, you were invincible for a period of time, because you just
Yeah.
lay down in the countryside somewhere, and if you saw anyone walk past or walk even remotely close to you, you could just take them out, and there were a select amount of points on the map that you could easily camp and all that kind of stuff. But
Yeah.
I'll admit right now, I haven't played the DayZ, so I can't actually give a... I haven't played DayZ, I mean, I can't give a good comparison or even a proper comparison. But I'm going to say right now that I enjoy the War Z.
Oh, okay. What I was going to say out of all of that is that it's actually ranked number 19 at the moment 19. In terms of top sales. You know there was like... You know there was like a huge backlash, right? You know about the huge backlash.
Oh yeah.
Okay, as long as you know that.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like the developers have actually been kind of cunts for a while. Like especially with that Steam announcement. Like when they because for anyone who doesn't know, they basically just lied through their teeth. Like they said there was all this stuff available for the game, which wasn't available and wasn't going to be available for at least 6 months to a year after the game was going to be released, and all that kind of stuff. And it was. It was a bit of a hubbub.
Yeah, that's a very, very clean way to put it. There was a bit of a hubbub. I would have said it was a bit of a fuck up on their part, but.
Well, I don't know. See, the fact is, I reckon it wasn't the director or the developers of the game who did that Facebook page, the Steam page. I mean, I reckon it was some sales team that they hastily hired who didn't
know
what they were doing.
Yeah. I don't doubt.
They thought, oh yeah, we can lie because the internet doesn't exist. I don't know.
There's it was actually really interesting, I posted it earlier today that like when the whole SimCity thing started to actually turn viral, like SimCity was trending in the fact that it was like sort of failing. Good Old Games, which is a great another service, a content distributor, a bit like. You know, Desura and Steam and Origin. They're actually got SimCity 2000, the game that got me into SimCity, for $6 right now, and it's DRM free. So if you want to go play that, I highly suggest playing that. I'm actually currently trying to create a small thing on Twitter of like games you can play other than SimCity for right now. Like I started playing.
Name the game you just said again.
Oh, SimCity 2000.
Oh yeah. Well, is there anywhere I can get that game, man?
Well, then you can get it on goodoldgames.com.
Goodoldgames.com. Sorry, I kind of phased out while you were saying that, but I'm going on goodoldgames.com right now.
Oh, that's fantastic. No, goodoldgames.com.
Because, no, I remember SimCity 2000 being one of my favorite games.
Yeah, SimCity 3000 was my favorite, but that's really just because of the soundtrack. That's what got me into jazz, strangely enough. it's like me just like, I love this soundtrack. What kind of a genre is this called? And like looking up jazz and like finding Miles Davis and like Grant Green and like all of these amazing like jazz guitarists and you know.
It's $6 right now.
I know, $6.
$6.
And you know what else is awesome and that you can get?
People, let's boycott EA, buy some City 2000 for $6. No. I'm serious right now. Let's boycott fucking EA. I want them to die. I don't want to hear their name anymore. They haven't released a good game in at least 5 years that I've actually wanted to play.
The thing is that another great game that everybody should really look up. Another two great games everybody should really look up, and that is also on Good Old Games is Waking Mars, which is a great sort of story. About a bunch of people on Mars and just pretty much trying to deal with the disassociation that they have from not being on Earth for a long time. And also Theme Hospital. Theme Hospital is one of the greatest simulation games ever made. And look at that! Look at that! SimCity 2000 Special Edition is number 3 at the moment, just below System Shock 2. System Shock 2 being the predecessor to Bioshock.
Yeah. $6, people. $6.
$6.
Good old games. Not EA. Not bullshit.
This is yeah.
Well, it is EA. It was published by EA.
Well, no,
wasn't.
It wasn't published by EA. It was published by just Maxis. It was just Maxis.
Are you sure? Because it's saying on the information page for Good Old Games that it was published by EA.
Well, no. See, Maxis started up. I will admit EA was a distributor. I don't count EA.
Well, that's the difference between a publisher and a developer.
Sorry. Yes, that's a very good point, and I need to make that distinguish a lot more.
But this was back in the days before EA decided to fuck everything that it wanted to publish.
Yeah.
And I mean that in a literal way. Gets its big, dirty, black dick, gets all the popping veins and all that kind of shit, and just shoves it up its ass.
Okay.
And it's not consensual. By no means is it consensual.
I agree with you completely, but it's just like, nah, he's saying the things that I can't say.
yeah, I'll get sued, you won't.
Speaking of things that I can't say, there's the reason that we were on a hiatus briefly, and now it's kind of time to get a little bit more serious. And I feel that I need to be honest about the situation because I have learned very recently that when I create something, or when I want to create something, whether it's, you know, something as simple as recording on a podcast, or just in a conversation, when I actually want to create a connection, I feel like the best way to do it is to ease into it slowly and to actually have a proper discussion about something. And
oh, absolutely.
And I feel like this is something I really need to discuss, and I feel like it needs to be on the record, because I feel like this is something that's a part of my life now that, while I'm still working through it, I feel like this is a part of the process, and I actually am seeing a counselor for what happened. But basically, some time ago, and I won't specify a date because that just makes it a little bit more difficult, but some time ago, I've been dating a lovely woman by the name of Arcadia for some time. Or girl, if she prefers that. She's lovely. She's a bit older than I am.
Basically, she has a vagina, and that's what Harrison's trying to say.
She's female, I swear. And her unfortunately her brother became ill over the past couple months. I believe he came back from Mexico, and he had sort of a spell. And the doctors checked. You know, they couldn't really find anything. And they, you know, they're doing all these tests, and you know, they were sort of trying to find out what was wrong, and they were giving him certain different medications to sort of, you know, try and perk him up, and also to fix what was wrong with him. And unfortunately, he took his life recently, and it's just been really, really sort of difficult between me and my girlfriend and her family. It's not like we've been fighting or anything like that. It's just been a very, very difficult time, because we've all had to, you know, adjust to what's happened. And I hope she's not offended by the fact that I feel like I need to talk about this, because I want to create a dialogue between, you know, our audience, as very few and dozen that they are. And also you, Ben, because I feel like you're my friend, and I feel like there is a transparency and honesty that I have with you, that you know, I don't have with people I just meet in the street. It's, you know, it's a part of the friendship, but it's sort of going through this and sort of, you know, we had the funeral a shorter time ago, and you know, it was amazing to see the amount of people turned out. It was over 300 people packed into this tiny little chapel, and you know, a lot of people had to stand outside, you know, in the cold weather, and they were more than happy to, like, you know, a lot of people were asked, you know, do you want a chair, do you want to sit down on the step, and they said no, it's fine, and they had the whole funeral broadcast outside to them. And it was just amazing to see all these people come together during a tragedy, and it's just been, it's been difficult for me to process, because I've only known the guy for the entire time that I've known Arcadia. Like it's just because he was her brother, and we had our differences at times, and you know, that was upsetting when we've had those differences, but in the end we kind of, you know, made sort of a connection. Like before he was sick, before he went on holidays, you know, before all that, like, you know, months ago, and I guess there's no real closure to the situation, because he's gone, you know, and that's tragic in a way, but it's just, like, the fact that I got to know him, it makes me feel glad that I got to know him, because he was such an amazing person, and he was, you know, in his own way, he was an entrepreneur, he was, you know, very healthy, he was always interested in what you were talking about, and he always actually asked questions to know more about and stuff like that, even if you know that he had no prior interest in it. And you know, I feel weird, because he's got friends who are better friends, you know, to him than I ever was, you know, a, you know, possible, I don't want to say, like, you know, brother-in-law or anything like, but you know, there was that kind of sort of connection, because you know, I love Katie, and we're leading down that route, but it's sort of, it's very weird dealing with all this stuff, as you can tell by the fact that I keep using run-on sentences and not completing them. But yeah, it's I've dealt with death, like, very briefly before in my life, but it's usually been times where I can't comprehend it. Like when, you know, when I was 8, my grandfather died, and you know, and I tend to do awful or inappropriate things after death, or from the two previous death experiences. Like I remember being 8 years old, and I had this diary for whatever reason. An 8-year-old needs a fucking diary, and I mark the date that he passed away, and I drew, like, I drew what I knew about death, and that was, you know, people die, and they go into gravestones, I'm 8, what is this, you know, and I just drew a little gravestone, and I wrote his name on it, and the, you know, the date that he died, like, the year that he died, which was that year, and I just had, like, a little speech bubble with the word no coming out of it, And I hope I fucking burnt or lost that diary, because that would be tragic to find years later down the track. But I think that, you know, and then when my grandmother died, I basically begged my girlfriend at the time, you know, to hold me, like I like almost getting into a fight with her about the fact that, like, I need companionship, I need you, I need sex, I need you to cuddle me, like I need something right now, and I don't, you know, I don't know why, you know, I feel like this. Clearly, like, I just not responding to death properly.
Well, I wouldn't say that you weren't responding to it properly, man. There's actually, like, a lot of people whose grieving periods are just completely addled with sex. Just a lot and a lot of frivolous one-night stands and, like, all this kind of, like, sexual partners and reigniting flames with old loves and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's... I actually experienced that exact same thing. When, like, the way I can relate to you in these sorts of situations, I myself haven't dealt with death much throughout my life. I've been to 2 funerals in my entire life. I'm glad for that completely, because the 2 I've been to were not fun. They weren't, I didn't feel like they actually helped me at all. Like, I was kind of, I sat through them for everyone else around me, basically. Like, I spent both funerals thinking I could deal with this better by myself at home with a bottle of vodka in my hand or something like that. That might not itself be healthy. But the 2 funerals I've gone through were, when I was 14, a friend of mine died. Like, she got hit by a car when it was a hit-and-run kind of thing.
Oh, geez.
And I have to admit completely, like, there was a period where I did hype up the relationship I had with her at that point, because something natural when somebody dies is that everyone who's still alive will turn it on themselves.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as soon as someone dies, everyone from every corner of the earth is suddenly their best friend, you know? There's that old Chaser song, which is, I can't remember the title, but
I think... Yeah, like, turn into top blokes after death. Like, that's...
Yeah. Exactly, like, and stuff like that. But because 2 years ago now, well, less than that, I'd say, a year and a half, my grandmother and my dog both died within a month of each other.
Oh, dude, I just thought it was your grandmother. That's fucking...
No. It's painful to say, but both were actually as painful as each other, because my grandmother, she lived with me and my family in my house. Yeah. So she raised me just as much as my parents did to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And then there was my dog, who at that point in my life was actually my best friend. Like, I was a pretty lonely guy in that time, and so I basically, when I'd come home, I would ignore my family, angsty teenager me, and walk straight to my dog and just spend the next hour with him for me to unwind and, you know, build up the energy to actually talk to my family and stuff like that. So it was like, you know, it was a very difficult time period in time for me, and, like, through that grieving process that I went through, I actually ended up damaging quite a lot of friendships that I had with some of my female friends, because I was so lost in this period of grief that I was just like, yeah, I'm gonna use this to get laid. I'm just gonna get pussy because my grandmother died. Like, and, like, well, that was the I'm not really meaning to be funny at this point. It's like that's the actual state my mind was in. I was just thinking, yeah, I can capitalize on this. But, and it didn't really hit me until about 6 months after the fact that I was going through all this pain, that I was in all these kind of get rich quick methods of dealing with grief that I was trying to put myself through that weren't actually helping at all. Like, you know, I'd abuse any sort of drug or anything like that, and I'd abuse my friendships and my relationships to the point where I was, like, trying to guilt women into having sex with me. You know, it was a very, like, it's a very difficult time for anyone to go through.
I feel the sort of same way about it. Like, it's I feel like there's so much that is unsaid about death, and that it's very interesting to explore that and sort of human relations, you know, sort of absolutely, like, afterward.
It's easily the most interesting subject in the world, death. Like, you know, except if you're in, like, you know, a really happy mood, any time of any point of the day, I'm have a conversation about my own morbidity, because it is, or anybody else's morbidity for that matter, because it is the most kind of, like, it is what separates us from the rest of the animal kingdom. We are animals ourselves. Every human is an animal, but the only thing that really separates us is the fact that we're conscious of the fact we're going to die. Other animals, they try to deter their own death, but it's us who know that we're going to die. We're not trying to just deter some far off thing. We're not trying to survive. We're trying to not die. Right, and that might just sound like linguistics and semantics in there, but it's the way that our mind is really communicating that idea to ourselves, and that's really the most important part.
Like the thing that I've sort of seen, like with the way that people have sort of reacted and the way that Katie's had to like constant like I feel like I'm not a part of the immediate family, obviously, because Katie and I aren't married and this and that and the other, but look, I feel like I'm like one, degree away from the family that I shouldn't be grieving, but I have fucking had outbursts I've never felt before in the past, fortnight, and it's been horrible, just feeling that, it's not like something that I regret, just the feeling of it, it's such a relief afterwards, but it's just like thinking about it all leading up to it, we had like this really really bad sort of day, like the week after it had happened, and I just fucking like I was sort of like the morning I woke up, I had a fair amount of like sleep, like compared to what I was having the nights leading up to that sort of night, like I had a good amount of sleep, and that's what usually sort of turns me off a day, but it's usually like I sort of feel upset and then I just sort of get over it, but like today it just kept fucking building like every single hour, and then I thought I was holding it all together, and then I got to Katie's mom's house, and unfortunately, her brother's fiance, lives at that house now because, the house that it took place. She doesn't really want to live there at the moment for very obvious reasons. And I was holding it together, and I thought, maybe if I got in the car and I just cursed all the way home, I would be fine. But I just lost it when I just it's a fucking sort of cliche thing that you see in movies where like somebody drops something, and I fucking dropped my keys, and I just couldn't hold it back anymore, and I just ended up crying in the fucking middle of the street, and Katie's holding me, and she's just like, it's you're grieving, like this is what you're going through, like this is how it's manifesting itself, and I'm like, I know. I fucking know it. I fucking hate every fucking second. Like, why? And it was just like I felt that like you can't hate, like in terms of death, you can't hate the person that's dead. And I don't hate him, but I feel like
I wouldn't say that's particularly correct. I mean, we can all pretty much, to use the most obvious example, we can all hate Hitler or
Oh
something
yeah,
like
no.
that.
But like you don't have a personal connection to Hitler. Like it's like
Oh
it's
yeah, absolutely not. In like, if we're gonna get literal about everything, I technically don't have a reason to hate Hitler. Like he's
Yeah,
never
well,
affected
you're
my
not
life
Jewish.
completely. Really directly. Or actually no, I can't make a judgment call about that, because there could be, if Hitler never existed, the timeline could have changed, all that kind of blah blah blah. Anyway, back to the serious matter. With grief, it is like, I there's points where, I question whether I've actually finished grieving over these two kind of deaths that I've had, and like things like that. But on the opposite side of the scale, like, and this isn't me, like, to, well, I'm gonna, like, just two kind of quick tidbits. With my grandmother's death, there was a long period where I thought I was fine. I was just like, oh, because she was 93 when it happened. She had been living with us as long as I'd been alive. So, and she had this tendency where she'd always talk about the fact that she was going to die very soon, and this was from when I was a young child. So, like, it's something I like to say is the fact that I was conscious she was going to die, and I knew she was going to die, and I was completely in a state of mind where she was basically already dead. And in the last 6 months of her being alive, I was living outside of home, and every weekend I'd visited, it almost seemed like she'd be laying it on even thicker.
Oh
And
God.
like she'd been like, oh, my time isn't long now, like, it's all short and stuff like that. So by the time she actually passed, like, I remember the day it happened, I was at uni, and we just finished a day of uni. It was 3:30, and I was walking between class to my car, and just as I was about to, get my keys out of my pocket, I got a call from my mother, and it was the middle of the week, and I would never get calls from my mother in the middle of the week unless it was an emergency or something was wrong. And I kind of just got this thought in my head, and I was like, oh, this is it.
Oh
And so I
fuck.
picked up the phone, and she was just like, she like, and it was completely out of the blue thing. She told me what happened, and like, I hung up, and like, well, she told me everything, and like, I talked to her a bit, and then I hung up and got in the car, drove, the 5 minutes back to my place, and I kind of walked in, like, I walked in the house. My two roommates were there. They were like, hey, I was like, hey, I'm just gonna go hanging out in my room forever. see you later kind of thing. Like, I didn't really want to talk or anything like that. So I kind of just hung in my room. I didn't cry or nothing for a good 6 days. Like, I even went through the whole funeral and I didn't cry. And, like, I'm not sure if that was, you know, healthy or if it was a good thing or anything like that. It was just, like, something I just didn't want to... I just didn't want to share that emotions with those emotions with other people. Like, it, I felt that the relationship me and my grandmother had was very, very personal, and it was really between me and her. And, like, it was at points, it was there was like she was a 93-year-old woman who I would talk to like she was 14. All the friends who met her always said that they didn't quite hear somebody talk to an elderly woman quite the way I would to my grandmother and stuff like that. So we had a very interesting relationship, and I was always I don't take pride in saying it, but I was her favorite amongst the family.
Yeah.
Like, you know, she did dote on me. She would sneak me an extra $20 every weekend. And she, like, when I was younger, she, like, the main way I got fat as a kid, like, you know, what contributed to my childhood obesity was the fact that she would actually spoil me. She'd have this room at the back of our house, and I'd go into her room every day after school, and she'd have a box of Tiny Teddies waiting for me and
aww,
all this kind of stuff. So it was, I had a very, you know, private relationship with her and stuff like that. So I didn't really feel like sharing that with many other people. But the day that I did break was when we went over to I went over to my the house that I spent my teen years growing up in.
It
was like I went into her room, and my parents said, we're gonna start clearing this room out. We're gonna start either putting things into storage, chucking things away, or giving them along to other people and that kind of thing. And I was like, okay. So I went around, and I had pretty much first dibs on the room. Like, anything I wanted, I could have had, except if it was, like, gold or something really valuable.
Yeah.
And the one thing I took was this, little Peter Rabbit, little plush doll. Like, it's a rabbit that has Peter, you know, embroidered into the vest, like, into the blue vest. Like, it's a Peter Rabbit kind of plush doll. And I remember it because she gave that to me when I was born. And I then put that on her desk, her dresser, when I was about 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah,
I thought I was getting too old to be, you know, having a stuffed toy around and stuff like that. So I then put that on her dresser. Like, just one day, I just walked into her room and I just placed it on her dresser, and it didn't move for the next 15 years. And then that day, I just decided to take it back. Aww. So it now sits in my cupboard, and every time I go to, you know, get a new clothes, whatever, get a new shirt or what, change that event, I see it and I get reminded, and, you know, I really wouldn't be the person I was without her. And that's what I try to do with my death, with my grief, at least. I'm trying to be the person that she would have wanted me to be. But I'm not, like, she was 60, she was 93, she was a little bit racist at some point. I'm not trying all that hard, but it's still, like, you know, the things that she gave to me throughout my life, I'm trying not to completely just, you know, forget about them. I'm trying to let my life kind of, you know, not be a shrine to hers, but at least be, I don't know. See, as an atheist, it can get very difficult, because with Christianity, you have that sense of eternalism, that sense of legacy, that when you die, you don't have to leave something behind on Earth, because you get to live for eternity in heaven, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And with atheism, you kind of lose that fact. You kind of, like, you only leave behind the memories that you intentionally leave behind and stuff like that. So I'm very much trying to, you know, do something that at least satisfies myself emotionally. Trying to, like, you know, if I was somebody else looking at me and I knew everything about this relationship, about her death, about all this kind of stuff, I would want to look at myself and be like, oh, you know, like, just oh, he loved his grandmother, good on him, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's what I really feel like. If you actually care about, you know, the person who dies and the experiences that you have to go to, you have to not build a shrine to them, not try to build them into some sort of deity, or be like, oh, they were without error, they were without sin, anything like that. Just try to, you know, at least remember them, at least
and act humanize in a way. Them.
Yeah, exactly. Like, don't turn them into a statue. Like, you know, that's the biggest problem. That's you do that, you end up with North Korea. Like, you know, it's it, like you end up with a necrocracy. You say that a country is being led by, you know, two generations worth of death. Like, I've been rambling for a good 10 to 20 minutes now or so I think it's your turn to talk.
I feel like one of the hardest, like, at the funeral, like, it was amazing seeing everybody turn up, and then, a few friends of Katie and mine turned up, and that's when I thought I was going to cry initially, and I held it really good until people started telling stories, and it was just sort of heartbreaking. Like, his closest friends came up, and it was just... seeing them, like, these guys who are, like, you know, in their, you know, early to mid-20s, just telling stories, like, just casual stories, like, you know, like, the last time I saw him, or, you know, like, just, you know, how they, you know, play together as a kid, or even just, like, playing, you know, games on the computer and stuff like that. It was just, like, just so much of it, it just brought down to, like, this very humanistic level, and it was just fascinating. I feel like not the worst part, and there was no worst part of the funeral, to be honest, because I don't think funerals have them unless, you know, it's like death at a funeral and, you know, something wacky happens. I totally forgot, like, you know, during the preparations for the funeral about the fact that, you know, they play music at funerals, and I'd only ever been at, you know, I guess they'd be called old people's funerals, and they had to choose the soundtrack. And that's one of I guess that's what it would be called, the soundtrack. And it was one of the hardest things I'd ever seen, you know, have family do, like, cause they're all, you know, they all love culture and they all love music. And now this music is, you know, solidified to this person, you know, it's like getting concrete and just putting it, you know, putting a mix of this person and this music together. Like, there is, you know, some music now that is essentially going to always be tied to them. And that's not a negative thing, but it's going to be hard because he loved film so much. And a lot of the music that they ended up using is they had to use from different film soundtracks and stuff like that. So, you know, there were songs from Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs and The Shawshank Redemption and Gladiator, and it's all just, you know, and it's always going to be, you know, associated with them, with him. Basically, because I was like, you know, I don't know what to do. How can I help? Is there anything I can do to help? And they knew that, you know, I do, you know, audio design and mixing and stuff like that. And they wanted me to cut down some of the songs for the funeral. So I had to listen to those songs over and over again. And I just reinterpreting and misinterpreting and overinterpreting every single one of those lyrics, like, every single time that I, you know, they asked me, like, you know, can you cut here? Can you make it, you know, can you fade out here and stuff like that? You know, can you adjust the levels here? And I was just like, yeah, no, I can do that. And I was just like, it looked like I was just getting more and more pissed as it went on. But really, I'm just like holding back tears because, like, I would just listen to one of the songs that they used was Flowers on the Wall, which is used very briefly in the film Pulp Fiction. And there's, you know, there's just like this, there's a verse in it where it talks about, you know, I go out sometimes, but then I go right back into my room and you know, I don't have to go live this, you know, exaggerated, overzealous life. I can just enjoy myself doing what I do. And that's really how he was. And fuck, I'm tearing up now. I feel like every single song didn't misrepresent him at all.
Yeah.
And I feel... That's what he needed to some degree, even though he's no longer with us. Like, that's, you know, a tribute to him. And, you know, I felt like, oh no, I'm doing the hard thing. I'm mixing music. But his mother, you know, had to, you know, go through all of these old photos to create a small picture slideshow and then put music underneath. And I can't even imagine to do that for your own child as well. You know, somebody who you raised in every single, you know, sentiment of it, you know, helped raise with, you know, the friends and family around you. It was hard. The last 3 weeks of my life have been very difficult, and it's never been something I've experienced before. So yeah, that's the summation of the past 30 minutes. I'm really sorry if we depressed everyone.
Oh, well,
This is a podcast about
dude,
memes.
let's depress everyone. Like, I don't know. Let's actually have just a slow. This could be like, I don't know. Your parents could die tomorrow. Knock on
Oh,
wood that
God,
they
dude, no,
don't,
not
but
cool.
they could, and we could have an even more depressing podcast in another month. So,
I know.
like, but I reckon let's just try to like, I don't know. We're on this track. Let's really ride this train home because this is somewhere where a lot of people kind of differ to me. It's the fact that like. I like black comedy to such a degree that my parents actually had to tell me not to make jokes at my own grandmother's funeral.
Oh, God.
Yeah, like, the first thing me and my dad said to each other after it happened was a joke, and I'm not going to repeat it because
Oh,
it's
no.
too hard to actually build the context for the
It's.
actual joke itself. But it was just like, it's death is one of those things that no one really yet has the correct way to deal with because it is one of those just those giant question marks. We know nearly nothing about what happens to, like, well, we know what happens. The body ceases to send blood and electrons and signals all throughout itself, and it slowly just starts to decay and break down and decompose and all that kind of stuff. We know that. We know the physical side, but we don't know the
Yeah.
spiritual, we don't know the emotional, we don't know the psychological effects of death on a person. So, as in the person who's dying and the people who aren't dying. So one of the biggest questions I had to kind of encounter when my grandmother died was the fact that do we or, and it's not just the funeral, do we host the funeral, do we host everything, is it for them, are we trying to tribute to them, are we trying to do it in a way where we're making ourselves think that if they were sitting in heaven right now watching us that they'd be happy of what we did, or are we trying to do it for ourselves? Because with that whole music selection thing you were just talking about, there was actually a little bit of there was a little bit of what's the word I'm looking for, angst between me and a couple of my family members over my grandmother's death, because at her wake and her funeral, when we were talking about music selection, she didn't leave anything in her will or any note that said what she wanted, and
Oh, man, that's.
so my sister decided that it would be a good idea to play the Beatles' "Here Comes the Sun,"
Oh,
and
man.
I knew that my grandmother loved, like, I knew personally that she loved, like, her favorite song was the Ave Maria as performed by Pavarotti, and I thought, as cliched as that is, that would be a pretty appropriate thing to play at a funeral. And then, like, we get to the funeral and my sister starts playing "Here Comes the Sun." So every time I have to listen to one of the happiest Beatles songs in the world,
Oh.
I want to go kill myself because it's
Oh my God.
like it's just one of those things. Like, and it's like I don't really hold any animosity towards any of my family members for doing that or anything. It's just one of those, weird things that now whenever I listen to this really happy song, which is all about coming through a dark point and just like and getting to the
Yeah.
other side and being like, yeah, like, everything's all right, like, kind of thing. Like, now whenever I hear everything's all right, all I think is we're all gonna die. So
Oh my
it's
God.
kind of complicated in that way.
Yeah, well, see, the thing is that like just sort of like just sorting every single part like I kind of try and structuralize my own life with like how certain songs fit in and stuff like that. Like I'm pretty sure everybody's had that moment where they're listening to a song and it makes me feel like a fucking badass. Like I feel like that thing has been on the rise ever since like Walkmans were invented. And I was listening to I don't listen to Portishead that much, and I know I love Portishead, but for some reason I was listening to it. And there's a song called Elysium, and it's just got this fucking amazing beat and amazing opening. And I just finished a class that I thought I was running late to, and then we got to leave early, and I was like, "This is awesome." And I fucking played that, and I just walked straight out, not just like a ghost through people. And I was just like, "That's good. I'm fine with that. Like that would be a perfect song for an opening of something." And then I thought everything back to the funeral thing. I'm like, "Fuck opening of things. Things will end. You'll end and you'll die. And this is not a song for a funeral." And I had to like fucking push myself back into like this corner of like, "Hey, whoa, 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 whoa. It's okay. It's all right. The funeral's already happened." You know that Voyager is going to be played at your funeral. Don't worry, you're fine. It's going to be all right. And I just had to go to the next class, but
Oh,
it's
like I've hopefully said to enough people in my life what I want to be played at my funeral that there isn't any discussion about it whatsoever. Like, I have this one album picked out, and it's called oh fuck, I've actually forgotten the name, but it's by the band Virgin Black, and it's they have this three-part album called Requiem, and it's like, you know, it's they're this Australian doom metal band, and it's horribly depressing, all that kind of stuff, but it's like, it's funeral music. It's actually classed as funeral doom metal.
Okay.
So it's like, it's actually,
I'm
you
looking
know,
at the cover right now.
literally and physically appropriate. Like, you know, it's there's no mixing metaphors or, you know, crossing over emotions or anything like that. When you listen to this album, you know that you're trying to be, you're like, I don't know. It's, have you ever watched 6 feet, 6 feet Under?
Oh God. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
It's my second favorite show in the world. And it's like, it's almost purely because, like, you know, I wouldn't have been able to deal with my grandmother's death in the way that I did without that show, because, like, I was able to hold it together and actually be able to survive and live and not be completely overrun with grief because of that show. So I recommend it to anyone ever, even if you don't like depressing shows. It's the fact that it deals with things, and it deals with such a bleak kind of issue in such a lighthearted and enlightening way. Like, it's really good for that sense. But I've actually forgotten why I brought up 6 Feet Under.
No, because it helped you get through stuff, and I feel like,
oh yeah, absolutely.
I just wanted to say, like, I feel like we should go back to you know, what our show is about. We had other stuff to talk about, but it honestly doesn't matter. I'm so glad that you know, we've talked about this. Like, the only other thing is that you know our friend Howard.
Yeah,
him and I have sort of started to do very, 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 very early work on a game that eventually we want to make.
Mm.
And I've been sort of testing myself with the writing process of that, and, like, structuring it is one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. And I imagine that it'll be harder for him to code, and his brother to make the art for it. And I just, yeah. Anyway, but yeah, what I wanted to say was the fact that
well, we should cap off our last issue before we move on, I reckon.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of our last issue, like, I'll talk about the game next week. Whatever. Anyway, but the
well,
I feel like it's good, and we're still recording with this, and I think that's an important thing, that, you know, it's something that we've sort of discussed, you know, about our own experiences, and I feel like, yeah, maybe I doubt we're going to, like, help a lot of people with it, but I'm glad to help some people with it.
I feel like anyone who goes through any sort of grieving period or death or anything like that, they can relate to what other people go through. Like, the main problem that comes in these sorts of situations is when it turns into a pissing contest.
Yeah, that's what I fucking... Yeah. Like, I'm not going to name any names, but during the process, during the time, there was a few people I met with, or I discussed it with, that it's nobody you know, and it's nobody that I really care about, but your response wasn't the best, and it actually got to a very weird point where we were talking to somebody that was quite integral to the funeral preparations, and she started talking about the fact that... she saved her son mid-suicide and then helped him, and you know, she was, you know, proud about the fact that, you know, he lived, and, you know, it was something that, you know, everybody, you know, needs to go through and deal with. And I'm like, fuck you! Like, that has nothing to do with that situation. Like, oh, we get it, like, that's fine, but the fact that you even sort of associated it with that situation and told us about the fact that, you know, oh, you saved him, as if, like, you know, we couldn't. Like, fuck you and every sort of, like, high horse that you fucking want to sit upon.
Oh, yeah.
I just, like, how every person in the room dealt with that was appropriate, and I was lucky at the time. I was focused on something else.
Well, this is something I've wanted to ask you, Harry, because
yeah, yeah.
I wasn't actually sure of the method, but, yeah, now knowing that it was suicide, how do you feel towards suicide? Because I'll give my own opinion first.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I don't want to give the impression I'm trying to trap you or anything.
No.
Personally, I'm completely pro-suicide.
Okay.
I think that if any, like, you know, your own consciousness, your own existence, anything like that, it's your choice.
Wow.
Like, if you want to end at any point, you can, and you have the right to. It's not a
no,
weak thing. It's not a cowardly thing. It's just a, you know, just get out. I do think, however, that it does cross into cowardly or weak when it does, you know, if you're doing it because you're in debt, and that debt then transfers to a lot of people, or if you're leaving behind problems that other people are going to have to deal with by your suicide, then I think that is the only time which I would be against it or classed as cowardly or weak or anything like that. But personally, I say this half jokingly and half in trying to reserve the right to just do it myself someday. It's like if I ever get a
Jesus, man.
terminal illness, if I'm 50 years old and I'm alone and got like no job or anything like that, like I'm going to the nearest bridge that's 5 stories tall. Like, it's like. And that might be the most unfunny joke anyone has
That's
ever made.
it's incredibly unfunny.
Oh, completely. And it's very insensitive to a lot of people who have undergone stuff like that. But it's just it's the fact that like that's me being partially honest. It's just like suicide is our choice. Like it's a person's choice as much as abortion is a woman's choice or anything like
Yeah.
that, I find. So what's your take on?
Hey everybody, I actually talked to Ben about this recording and the sort of 2 minute sort of thing that he does there, and he asked me to, I'm the one who edits these episodes, and he asked me to, possibly edit out anything that would be deemed very offensive considering the subject matter. And I found that while some people will be offended by what Ben says and what I say, I think that it's more of an outpouring than anything else, and it's something that I felt that we should keep in. So I do apologize if you were offended by it, but that is not our intention with this. I think that Ben and I discussing the things that we are discussing is more open than how we would usually be in other circumstances, and you may or may not appreciate that. That's your opinion, and that's more than fine. But I felt that we should keep that in. It's just something that I felt was necessary to say to some degree. So thank you, and now we'll go back to actually listening to the show.
I'm glad you went first, because that really softens the rest of the discussion that I'm going to have about this.
Yeah,
Which guy's
like
going to say,
right now,
"Fuck you"?
you're in the
No.
safe seat. You could say anything, and no one will hate you as much as they do me right now.
No, my feelings of towards it is that I'm not for it, like, except for in the case of euthanasia. Like that seems to be like the only time where I feel it's appropriate. Like I feel like, that there, I maybe it's because, I try and surround myself with very positive people, and I try and be optimistic, especially with stuff that's happened in my past and like stuff that, I definitely don't want to talk about or definitely don't want to experience ever again. But I think that I mean, I've felt suicidal, some at times, and that feeling sort of like depressed that turns into that, like that kind of thing. Sorry, depression that turns into that, and that really is just fucking exhausting and awful in every way. Like I've never thought, too much about it. Like it's always been like, I just wish I was fucking dead. Like I don't have to deal with this. Like this seems like, the other per like the other like it's usually another person causing me grief, and then I'm like, I just don't want to deal with this because you're a fucking idiot, or you're somebody I don't want to ever have to talk to. Where like it's like a very weird response of like, I just want that fucking person to die, where it's like, oh well, no, really, I don't want that other person to die because, they have a family, and they're trying to live their life, and it's just a miscommunication. They don't understand it. Oh, maybe I should just kill myself. Like that kind of situation where it's like I've moved beyond that now. Like just in the past, literally the past fortnight, with everything that's happened, where I'm like, no, fuck that person. That person should fucking die because that situation is hypothetical. I'm still me. I'm thinking about this in my consciousness. I have a fucking family too. I have a fucking girlfriend. I have a life. I have stuff that I want to do and complete. Fuck that other person for making me feel like this. Like it's just like it is. It just like when I fucking experienced that, it was such a fucking breakthrough. Like that, it was just like I had to like. I just wanted to run outside for an hour and just tell people, like, just run up to them and be like, hey, do you feel bad? Did you feel awful, like, right now? I'm like, yeah. Did somebody else cause it? Like, yeah. Fuck those guys. I'm like, oh, yeah. Don't, yeah. Like, just get a whole parade of people saying, fuck that person. And in a way, you bring all of those people together, and if somebody in that group, joins and happens to be, a person that the other person, wanted to die, then they have a discussion about it, or bind all of our, fuck those people, all those people, bring all those people together, and realize, we kind of hate pretty much everybody else, like, whether we're connected or not. There's probably something that, the reason that, that the person upset you, there could be a reason, that I could cause that, or that person could cause that, and that's, yeah, I feel like. I feel like a part of this is because I started, you know, like just thinking of this now is because I started to actually finish my current degree at uni. I have to finish do I sorry I have to finish with a course called Business Communication. And I've just been in all this time of me waiting around for these fucking SimCity servers, I've actually started to read the book, and a lot of it has been about, you know, the fact that like a lot of communication isn't done because people are either too lazy or too scared to actually bring something up. And that if somebody actually starts to make a fuss about it, that it's usually, you know, something that's really not worth fussing about, you know, unless you're in like a fucking super serious job where, I don't know, you're a general or somebody that deploys people to go get killed, then, you know, 90% of the time, not really worth it. If you work for a company and you're worried about, I don't know if we should put magenta in the printers or if we should put red, like it doesn't fucking matter. You're gonna die in 50 years regardless. Like it doesn't fucking matter. You just put red in, because you know what? Magenta's for pussies. Like that's fine. We brought it down to like, you know, I hate you just because you chose a color. It's not racist. I'm just saying that, you know, your choice in a color, it doesn't really matter. Like it might matter to you, and that's fine, and that's something
Oh,
you can
Harry,
talk about.
can you hear that helicopter in the background?
I can now,
Oh, okay, yeah.
because you pointed it out.
Yeah, well, it's just like, oh, don't want that kind of shitty background
No,
noise.
it's fine. I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
No, it's fine.
Cool.
But like the whole sort of situation sort of comes down to the fact that like personally, there's a lot of stuff that you know, I need to be accountable for. Like if I upset someone and it's intentional, then I know I'm a bad person. Like that's just the be all and end all of it, because if I knew about the person's, you know, the person was upset, or the person, you know, I knew that, you know, they didn't want me to talk about, you know, the fact that, I don't know, I mean, in your case, like I wouldn't bring up just willy-nilly like, oh, how's your grandmother? Like that's fucked up. That's fucking awful in every way possible. You know, how's she going? Look in the closet, like that kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, that's fucked up, and that's just mean-spirited, and you should, you know, in a way, you should walk away from that situation, and I should not be a cunt. Like it's just that, you know, like that's what I think, that's what maturity is about, where like you analyze a situation and you understand that, you know, there's an appropriate time for things, and there's appropriate times is when you should have those discussions. And like now, I mean, I feel like if I'm safe, if I feel like I'm in a safe zone and I'm with people that I can have it, like the discussion we've had, I would fucking have with no one else. Like it would be possibly you and Jess and Howard and Matt and Katie and Adam and, I don't know, maybe a few other people, but no one. I'm not gonna fucking like talk to, you know, somebody, you know, like my in a very awful, weird way. My sister has a wonderful catchphrase, you know, when she's talking about, you know, somebody she doesn't agree with, and she's just like, you know, why don't you just kill yourself? And I've been dreading, you know, the day that, you know, when Katie's around and my sister just fucking says that willy-nilly, because she doesn't just say it once. She like repeats it, you know, in the conversation, and you know, I just don't want her. Like I feel like, you know, that there's an insensitivity about that, especially, you know,
Well, it really
I mean, my sister's an idiot, but you know, like there's you know,
absolutely. Like, I'm not sure. I'm not really disagreeing or agreeing on any points because you said a lot of things in that last sentence there that I'm not really on anyone's side if I agree or disagree with anything. But it's more the fact that, like, I don't know, it really comes down to the fact that you can joke about everything, but not with anyone.
Yeah.
It's
Sure.
like, you can say anything you want and try to derive humor about it out of any kind of issue, context, or anything like that. You just need to pick your audience.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm around the KKK, of course I'm going to make some racist jokes. I don't want to die. I don't want to be labeled a sympathizer and get hung up just like, they would other people and stuff like that. It's just like, and that's okay, for the record, anyone who thinks that I'm being 100% serious when I say things like that or the suicide thing, by the way, I am trying to, as bad as they are, I'm trying to joke.
Okay.
And
No, it's just
but
because like
anyway,
it,
that's for the record and
anytime.
for all listeners and for anyone out there who is say God decides to die one day, and Satan takes over, and he's like, "Hey, let's make Ben famous." So, and like, someone is going through my old history, and they find these podcasts. Don't take what I say out of context. I'm not. I'm meaning in a humorous manner, and I'm trying to. I'm not. I'm trying to direct my My humor in everything. I'm not trying to be exclusive. I'm not trying to be racist. I'm not trying to be sexist or anything like that. Anyway, that was a massive tangent. Let's take a couple steps back.
Okay.
There's something I've wanted to ask you, and it's something that I haven't been able to talk about much with other people. When you're at the funeral, well, I don't know, did you have the funeral and then like a post-funeral kind of hangout party
thing? Yeah, we did, yeah.
Yeah?
Kind of, yeah.
Did you hate every single person that came and talked to you at that thing?
Everybody except for the few people that I actually wanted there. Here's the thing is that I was fine when I was talking to Arcadia's immediate family, and I was okay with talking to her friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, and when old people came up to me, pretty much everybody else who, like, pretty much, here's the list. People who spoke at the funeral, people who, you know, Katie and I were friends with and wanted there, Katie's immediate family, everybody else, I didn't want them to fucking say a word to me. I couldn't, it doesn't matter, like, I was basically, like, they didn't talk to me that much. But any time somebody who talked, who I was like, oh God, I don't know you. You clearly know me because I was sitting next to her. I just please don't. And then they would open their mouths and they'd be like, well, it was a good funeral. I'm like, fuck, why don't? And I would just be like, yeah, no, it was a good service. Like, you don't say it was a good funeral. You say it was a good service. Like, it's there's an etiquette here.
Well, even that, I don't feel like, you know, no one's going to think, that was a bad funeral. Like, you know, funerals can't exactly get much worse than what they already are, unless someone comes up and, you know, starts wiping their ass on the deceased head. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that is as bad as it can get, really. But I'm yet to be proven wrong on that fact.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, it was just like this tension, and I was so fucking glad that, you know, there was a bar there, and I ordered a few drinks every now and then, and I got very, very drunk during that ceremony, like, not during the funeral, during the wake, and afterwards, you know, a few of us went back to, like, the house, and we all, you know, just sampled scotches, and, you know, drank and discussed, like, death and everything like that, like, it was just such a relief to talk about it so openly with people that I cared about. And it's such a relief, like, having this discussion, because I tell everybody out there who's been listening, like, I've been dreading doing this podcast, like, since it happened. Like, the day after we were meant to record an episode, the day that we usually record an episode, I was, like, planned, like, you know, the day after that we were going to record one, and I just, like, just telling you what happened, like, I think you were one of the first people I told. Like, it was my immediate family, a few friends, you, and then I had to fucking tell work, and I fucking hated every single, like, character I wrote in that email, because you know how I feel.
Oh, I understand you completely.
It was just so hard, like, just thinking about, you know, like, it wasn't difficult bringing it up, but I was just like, you know, the way I had to word it, like, I didn't want to say, like, you know, I didn't want to be a dick about it, but I realized, like, looking back at the email, I was like, I was a dick to, like, every person who contacted me the week after that, where I was like, I can't really talk right now. I can't explain why. Like, it's that kind of sort of stuff where it's just like, that guy's being a dick. Where it's like, no, I have a good reason. Fuck you. Like, if it was any other situation, I would have no excuse for my behavior, but I feel like I get some kind of pass for it. I feel like there's a genuine, you know, sort of situation where, like, when that happens, people need to know. I feel the obvious thing is people need to know first, then they can understand that behavior. But when that behavior comes first, and then they know about it, I still, like, it doesn't matter either way. It honestly does not matter either way when it comes to something like that. As long as it's legit. If somebody's just being an asshole and then says, my uncle died. Then no, because the death certificate, you know.
Yeah, well, even then, like, I don't know, it's like a family member or a close, you know, acquaintance or anyone near you dying at any kind of point, that isn't a golden ticket to become an arsehole.
No.
And I definitely learned that the hard way. Like, that was, you know, there was, like, there was, like, I did, like, you know, there wasn't really a point where I was trying to take advantage of, you know, the deaths that I was going through or my grief or anything like that. But there was points where, because of my behavior, I had to reap consequences that I really shouldn't have had to go through in that point. Like, there was, when my grandmother died, I had work the night after it happened. And I went to my shift. I thought, yeah, I need to get out of my house. I need to stop being in my own head. I need to be around other people. I need to forget about what's going on. I need to start moving on, and I need to start that process. So I tried to make it happen as fast as I could. So I went to the first shift I had after the event, and it was absolute hell. Like, it was only a 2-hour long shift, but I was like ripping my eyes out of their sockets by the end of it, kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, I'd be walking to the change. Like, I was working as a waiter at that point, and literally my pattern would be I'd walk to a table, get their order, walk to the change room, stand there and like just stare in the mirror for a good couple of minutes I had the actual the energy to be able to go back out there and deal with seeing other people at that point. Then at the end of that shift, I had to work the next night, and I just thought to myself, no way in hell am I going back there tomorrow night. And when I called up and I told them, oh, you know, my grandmother died two days ago, kind of thing, they were just like, oh, well, why didn't you not work last night? And I tried to explain it to them, but in the end, my own kind of asshole behavior like made it so I had to work that night as well. Eventually, like the night after that, I got off because I had a different manager. But it was just like, you know, I had to reap what I sowed in that circumstance. And so there's a lot of other examples of that, and it's just you just got to deal with it in a healthy way. You just got to try to definitely talking about it is one of the big things. Like, you know, you might feel the complete opposite to this, but I reckon you'll feel 10 times better after we finish recording this podcast.
No, I know I will.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, you know, when I was sitting around not talking to anyone, you know, kind of bottling up everything I thought and felt, you know, it was really like it wasn't doing me any good. It resulted in me occasionally lashing out at the occasional person, just like, you know, going to random people that I knew, you know, either through Facebook or like, you know, in person to person through random encounters, and just being the biggest asshole in the world.
Yeah.
And I thought that just because I was grieving that I had, you know, the golden ticket to be able to do that. But now I've permanently damaged relationships and friendships and all that kind of stuff that I can't go back on.
Yeah. And it's a very hard sort of, subject, and I honestly think, like, we've had this discussion, you know, off mic, but I feel like we should separate this episode and the next episode, because this is pretty full on.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I honestly think now we
could give this, like, some sort of, I don't know, death cast or something. Like,
yeah, I think
special
that's
special title.
That's a grief cast.
Backroom dying?
No, my, no, no, that sounds even worse. I just feel like, not everybody, and you had this discussion with me as well, as, that not everybody feels like hearing a humorous pitch after talking and after listening to death for quite a while. All we can say is that I feel like the best advice we can give is you know, if you feel like you're going through a lot, if you feel like, you know, whether you feel depressed or whether somebody's died or something like that, you should really seek help. And if you need to, I mean, for the love of God, send an email to backroompitching@gmail.com. I know that sounds like a fucking stupid, like, you know, hey, send us emails, we're lonely, you know, like, that sort of thing. But, like, do send it. Like, if this helped, like, in any way, or if you are now thinking about, like, even thinking about seeking counseling, fucking do it.
Completely, yeah. Like, you know, if sending us an email is all that stands between you pulling the trigger or not, then send that fucking email. Like, you know, we don't, like, it's that simple. Like, you know, there's, everyone has to deal with depression at some point. Everyone has to deal with grief. Everyone goes through bad points. Everyone deals with bad, you know, feelings and emotions and all that kind of shit. And there's people out there who help. And, you know, there's things like Beyond Blue. And,
yeah, and Lifeline.
You know, other depression helplines and things like that. There's counselors, and there's a whole bunch of people who say, oh, counseling doesn't work. You know, psychiatry, it never works for me. Therapy never works. These Beyond Blue things, they never work, you know. But it's just, it's not about calling them up and expecting them to work. It's about actually trying to proactively work with them.
Yeah,
you know, it's like whenever you go on a diet, you know, you don't lose weight just by eating better. You know, you have to exercise as well. You have to change the amount of food you eat. You have to adjust the diet. You have to actually think about everything you do in your day to day kind of living. And it's the exact same with it's the exact same with depression. It's the exact same with grieving. You know, it's the you know, you can't be passive about it. You can't sit down your couch, be getting drunk every night, eating yourself to death, you know, smoking a million joints or whatever, and thinking, oh, this is just going to go away. No, you actually have to go out, seek help, try to better yourself, try to actually do something which isn't going to end up with you being another frivolous waste of life.
Firstly, I think that's fantastic advice. But but with that, it has to be your choice. We can't...
No, it shouldn't. You're not allowed to kill yourself. You're not allowed to die.
Oh my
God. You're going to send us that fucking email. I'm joking, guys. Come on.
it's fine. But we're playing good cop, bad cop here, essentially.
Yeah.
I don't know what I am. But the thing is that you need to sort of... I don't want to say you need to. Look, the thing you should... No, that even makes it even worse. Just live your life. That's what you should do. Live your life. Take what people say into account. And if you're feeling, you know, like it's overwhelming, there's people you can call. There's emails that you can send. There's people that can help. And there's a lot of stuff that you can do.
Mm.
And you should do it of your own accord. And that's... And one of those things that you should definitely... not do is end your life.
End of the day, shit happens, death happens. Let's all go kill ourselves.
Oh my
God. Have a big party.
Just every time.
I really need to stop.
Yeah.
I don't know. To take part of what I just said, you know, shit happens and death happens, and you know, that's life. You know, it's As much as I hate the saying by fucking Ned Kelly, such is life, you know, it's something that we all have to deal with. You know, we're all in the same boat. We're all humans. We all have that idea in our head. We all have, you know, the fear of death deeply embedded within our souls. So it's all something that we need to struggle through together, I reckon.
Yeah, yeah. And then I actually just want to say right now for those listening, there's actually an amazing... a comic book series by I'm going to butcher her name here. Her name's Karen Belhaz, and I met her last year at Supernova, and she has this amazing comic book series called Kinds of Blue, and people should really read it. I read it very briefly while I was at Supernova, and I actually rediscovered it again because, you know, she's on my Twitter feed. It's called Kinds of Blue. You can actually read it. It's free, but if you want to buy a copy, I highly suggest that as well. And it's just got some amazing comics about depression, about things that you're feeling, and it's all just about, you know, that you know, some things you're not alone in. That's what you need. That's what, you know, I feel like everyone's like, oh, this is what you need to realize. This is what you should listen to me say. Like, people need to realize stuff on their own, and I found that's very personal. Like, you know, people can say whatever the fuck they want at you, and you're probably not going to take it in, and that's fine that you're not taking it in, because you need to realize it yourself, because you need to do that. You need to be, that's a part of learning. That's a part of your experience. Like, you figuring out things, like, they'll keep saying it, and hopefully, you know, hopefully you'll remember that person saying that, and then you can go up to them and you can thank them. But if you don't, then you don't. And that's not your fault either. Like, there's stuff that you need to do and the stuff that they need to say. And, you know, that's okay. That's okay. That's okay. And we want to tell you, you know, that we love you as well.
Well, speak for yourself, Harry.
Well, I don't know. I love you.
No, I love you, Harry.
I love you.
That audience out there. I'm watching. I'm joking, guys. Come on.
Oh, crap.
Okay, I'm just going to say now, I feel like I really should. I apologize for any opinions that I've expressed throughout this podcast, and I also apologize if you disagree or are offended by any of them or anything like that. But I'm a little bit drunk.
Oh, okay.
I'm a little drunk, so... So I don't really apologize. No, I do. But my barrier for what's appropriate and what isn't is completely gone right now.
I think that helps, because at least you're being honest about it. Like, I'm tiptoeing around every single word that I say now, and maybe that's not the best, because maybe that's not being completely honest.
Well, I've completely ridden away with the idea of trying to tiptoe around what I say, and I say shit that I don't even believe myself.
Okay.
Like, if I really didn't about two more shots of vodka, I'd probably be saying the N-word right now and be like, yeah, what, who cares? Like, you
Jesus.
Know, kind of, I'm joking, come on. But probably the fact that I keep saying that makes everything I say even less unfunny, so...
It's alright, that's okay.
I might just stop talking.
Alright, let's just end it here.
Thank you. Let's do that.
Okay. I just haven't been recording the last like 5 minutes because I knew that you know that you'd be doing this. So I'm just gonna record now. So I want to thank you again, Ben, for helping me through this.
Oh, no worries, Barry. It's always an honor and a privilege to talk to you.
And everything is on the record now of everything that we said. Including the last 5 minutes.
Is my apology on the record?
Yeah, it's on the record. Don't worry.
Okay, good.
It's fine. It's there. I'm just mucking around. But the whole thing is that, yeah, I just want you to know that you're my friend. And please, if you're ever feeling like that, fucking tell me. I'm just telling you now.
Come on, you know me by now. If I ever have suicidal thoughts, the world will know.
Okay, yeah.
You should
get Twitter.
Just get Twitter, you know.
Yeah, if you're suicidal.
140 characters for a suicide note.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Oh god. Okay, yeah. That was. I'm getting worse and worse. I'm sorry.
If it was, you know, maybe given a fortnight from now, that joke you just said is one of the fucking funniest things I've ever heard.
Probably isn't, but we'll see. Give it 2 weeks.
Okay, yeah. But yeah, thank you so much for listening to this. We're really sorry we didn't fucking do a pitch this week. We have something prepared, and it's gonna be funny, and it's gonna be up in a few days. And
yeah, we got something special for y'all.
Yeah, it's gonna be something good, and it's gonna be for everyone. I realize like the whole thing of us being on iTunes, it doesn't really matter. Like I'm gonna keep uploading stuff to iTunes just to you know have you know a little steak on iTunes you know that we can eat later because steak is delicious. I just feel like I'm gonna keep uploading stuff to my blog because that's where I feel at home. That's where I feel happy, and that's...
Well, I reckon uploaded everywhere, man.
Yeah, well, no. Here's the thing. This is why I say this right now is that I can't afford to keep uploading it to Podomatic to upload it.
Oh no, you can't.
No, well, see, after the next was gonna be after the next 4 episodes or so. Like we've got like 4 episodes left, and then we have to like pay for it. And right now, because I've had to take it this month off work because everything's a bit too much at the moment, we might not be able to actually be on iTunes. But we can still keep uploading them. It's not like we're gonna stop doing this. Look, we could discuss this afterwards. I don't want to scare our listeners, all 12 of them, into just the fact that, like, yeah, you know, we will continue to have this podcast, and I will link to it on my Twitter, I'll link to it on our Facebook page, which don't forget to like and follow. And we just want to tell you that we love you, and this will keep going, because I love doing this. I love talking with Ben. And actually, we're going to have a live episode in July, and I'm actually thinking about just saying the word live episode, that sounds like we're actually going to do it live. I just mean we're actually just going to be recording it in Ben's bedroom, but thinking about it now, does Baxter's Lot, which is the wonderful bar that you work at in Melbourne,
Victoria, glorious bar,
do they host podcasts there?
Oh, no, they don't. It's way too small to host a podcast. Like,
what do you mean?
They struggle to host their patrons on the weekend.
But, oh, okay.
No, that's the joke about the size of the venue and not the amount of patrons they get. They get plenty of patrons, but no. Yeah, we'll, I don't know. We'll find somewhere good to record it. We might even go for we might go for a walk.
Oh shit! Did you hear that episode of I used to have an old podcast that you can listen to later on. That podcast with Adam and Ben and I. Adam with Howard and I, and we fucking just like walked around Wollongong.
I didn't actually listen to that, no.
Oh, man, it's awesome. It's like, because there's a part of it that eventually we had to cut out where we were talking about sex in the bathrooms. But like, there's this whole discussion leading up to that like, clearly, you know, we're clearly, like, walking around Wollongong, and I'm holding, like, my phone as, like, the microphone. And it's awesome. It's like a tour of the city.
What's the quality like, though?
Oh, it's really good. It's like, you can hear both of us talking.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, sorry.
Can you hear everything else in the world as well?
No, it's actually, because the way that I kept the mic, like, always, like, either evenly between our faces, and whenever we had something serious we had to say, we always, like, grab our phone, and, so, yeah.
Well, that's good, because I remember the first couple of podcasts we did of this, before we actually became Backroom Pitching officially, like, there was the first couple of times when I was still coming up to Wollongong on a semi-basis, when we would record in my parents' car, and when we'd go for a drive and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Horrific.
Yeah, that was just, that was really bad.
Yeah, but that's because we were placing the microphone, like, on the armrest between us rather than anywhere near our mouths or anything. But that's not to say that the quality of this thing is up to scratch, but we'll see.
Well, no, it's a good quality. It's just the fact that I've got a shitty internet connection and I'm sharing it with 8 different people in a house that I, you know, wish I didn't have to share the internet with.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind
but,
of.
But can I just say one last point before we close this up?
Yeah, sure.
To all our listeners, Harrison has expressed a lot of love to you tonight. I don't verbally express love, but I show it physically. And because this is an auditory podcast, you don't really experience that. But I'm giving you a lot of physical love, you know. So why don't you get us more listeners, huh? Why don't you show us to your friends?
Oh man,
huh?
It's got real.
Replicate our love. If we give you love, give us some back.
Yeah,
that's all I have to say.
Share
anyway,
this with people, suggest it on iTunes, rate us on iTunes. I totally forgot that's a thing.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, like people can like rate it like 5 stars and stuff.
Oh, so that's what I always press ignore on.
Yeah, sometimes, man. Yeah.
Anyway, Harrison, I've been Ben Semenchuk.
Yeah, and I've been Harrison Ekstrom, and this has been Backroom Pitching, the Deathcast edition.
Deathcast.
No, I'm going to call it Gravecast, but you know that's yeah. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a few days. It's only going to be a few days, and we're actually going to pitch something to you, and not just our emotions.
Yeah, this little you know, outburst of feels and all that kind of stuff. This will be a one-time thing, I reckon. Well, probably not, but this will be this time thing.
But anyway, thank you so much for listening, and thanks for another episode of Backroom Pitching with Ben and
Cheerio.
Harrison.
Cheers.